I don't think anybody's going to have any trouble hearing me either. But let me know if you do. I'm Kim G, and I'm still grateful recovering sugar addict and compulsive eater.
Hi, Kim.
And last month was my 18th OA birthday. And you know what? I've had this practice lately, the last few years, of celebrating that with Valentine's Day. Because the program, all to my experience, it all runs on love. All runs on every loving action, word, you know, even just love, quiet, loving acceptance of who we are when we need that too. It's all about love. So, I'm really grateful for being asked to talk today about the tools. Well, I am a tool. I'm a tool right now. I'm a tool because I'm practicing those, using those service opportunities and sponsoring people quite a lot. So I actually told one of my sponsees, I was in a conversation that kind of sort of became like a therapy event. It kind of looked that way. And I said, you know what, I'm a tool. Use me as a tool of the program. So that's how I think of myself today. My history was that I started binging when I was a teenager. But what led up to binging being an easy thing for me to start doing was I've always been a major daydreamer, a very flamboyant imaginer. My goals when I was a kid, I wanted to be tall. I planned to be tall, actually, and I wanted to be an international pop star. And those two things didn't happen. I was not in control of that stuff. So I started binging when I was a teenager, and the events around that binge cycle were, it was my belief in my family that good girls don't get angry. That is expecting something you should not expect. You shouldn't expect people to want to know how you feel about that, to care how you feel about that, or that it's uncomfortable or hurtful or whatever, or makes me fearful. So, you know, I was really, for the first time in my life, I had this huge amount of anger, rage, disappointment, hurt coming from my family. So I started taking bags of things to my room and coming out eventually with the empty bag, having a lot of food amnesia. So binging became the way that I tried to push down my anger and hurt feelings. And, then when I went on to college, I discovered that all the exercise I was getting sprinting around campus really rounded out the effects of my eating nicely. I liked that a lot. So, and I had an unlimited meal ticket in the dorm. So I was sprinting around like crazy and eating, you know, binging on all food available, including dessert. But the exercise became a compulsion for me too later. And so my cycle, when I got here, my cycles is coming to OA as an adult later on, was I would binge, go crazy out of control, and then I'd restrictive diet and do insane amount of exercise to try to control, try to tap it down. And I also had the idea that if I had the perfect body, as far as perfect body wasn't just thin, but it was also a very low body fat and the perfect shape and measurements and clothes and everything. So, you know, that's what my disease life looked like when I got to OA. And my life was basically one day full of, I would do something or try to do something, feel unworthy, feel like a failure, be fearful, and run to the vending machine. And I snuck to and from my office, between my office and the vending machine. And every moment of every day, I was either eating, thinking about what I was going to eat, longing for something I told myself I wouldn't eat, but eventually I would. And the moments in between the food thoughts were just pure terror. Like, life is, I can't do life. I can't do anything about life. It makes me too crazy. So when I came into OA, it's 18 years ago, I want to talk about meetings as the first tool, because of course that was the first tool any of us used, right? When we walked into a meeting, we were using a tool. We didn't even know it yet. And I was thinking about meetings, what meetings do for me have changed and where I am in recovery. And when I thought about it, you know, when I first started going to OA meetings, the first thing that happened that was helpful to me was I could hear how I was the same as everybody else. And I could identify with even people who had a different, you know, size, shape, experience, different binge foods, different trigger situations. What I was hearing was how you were like me. We had the same unmanageable, out-of-control disease. Then when I've been to meetings for a while and I was past that phase of hearing how I'm like you, then I heard how recovered people were really different from me. I was noticing the differences after that, like, okay, I'm here, I'm, you know, going to be a work in progress, and I'm in this fellowship and it's mine and I belong here. Now I'm hearing all these people talk about abstinence. What the heck is that? So then I started hearing clearly how recovered people who are abstinence, were different from me and what they were doing to get that way. And a lot of what they were doing was they were working at least half of the list of 9 tools at any given day. They were using those tools, and they were working the steps with a sponsor. But not just working the steps, you know, of course, in my experience in working the steps is that I procrastinate, I overanalyze, I try to do things perfectly, and perfectly doesn't appear, so I'm working, you know, I'm on this step for a very long time, and in the meantime, life is happening, and I'm reacting to it with my, you know, I'm so, you know, crazy, and I can't control it, and I'm having all my feelings about it. So I started really listening to those people who were in recovery and seeing. I remember my first sponsor, the first time I met her, she was the angriest woman in the world. But she was very honest. That was the thing is, she would come to my meeting and just, and I'd go, oh my God, I know more about her than I know about some of my family members. But then, later on when I changed meetings, because... I changed meetings because no one in my little home group was willing to sponsor. And I had to get to the point where I growed and became willing to do what it took to get a sponsor and get what I needed from the program. And then I meet her again, and she's just this happy, serene, released major weight. You know, she's smaller, she's on fire, she's sponsoring, and that was my first sponsor. Because I could hear how she was the one who verbalized how angry she was, and I knew that was the root of my problem. That's where it got me to binging. And now I could see how it changed for her, and she started sharing with me how that happened in working the steps, using the big book. And then with the meetings, so at least it took me 3 years to get willing to go get a sponsor. And I actually closed the meeting down. I was the one who was showing up every week and nobody else was. And I was sending newcomers to a different meeting. And then one day I said, you know, this is kind of crazy. I'm sending them to a different meeting and I'm sitting here by myself. Kim, you go to that meeting now. It took me a little while, but, you know, hey, I'm slow to learn and I'm stubborn. So now I've been through this step several times. And my current abstinence... I gave up different binge foods and different cycles and went through terrible physical withdrawal and emotional mourning. Oh, I never expected the emotional grief about giving up what I did, what food, what foods I was having a relationship with. And, you know, I went through all that stuff, and so into my third and a half, fourth year, I'm doing the steps. And when I got solidly halfway through my amends, just like the promises say, wow! You know, halfway through my amends, I'm surrendering a binge food and saying, okay, God, help me not pick that up. Help me by not picking that up, not buying it, not putting it in my mouth. And I went through the withdrawal, and I had pretty clean abstinence, and I started sponsoring. For about a year and a half or more, I had that abstinence. And it was continuing to go to meetings. And after I was absent and I started sponsoring, okay, now I'm to the point where I'm into action. I'm doing the things that that work for my sponsor and other people to get recovery. Now that I'm abstinent and I'm feeling everything, what do I do with that? And I started working more of the tools along with the steps to just keep what's really helped me, no matter where I've been from the beginning to now, is just do it. Just do something. Do one thing that takes care of me today, no matter what that is. And that way I don't get overwhelmed with thinking I've filled my day with have-to-dos. Because I'm a rebellious addict, too. There's that little five-year-old kid in me that says, no, I don't. I want to do what I want. I don't want to have to do. I don't want to have to work for this. Of course, I've learned that I do need to. It just doesn't feel like work anymore. So now I've moved on to the phase of, I come to my meeting to remember that I'm compulsive still, that I'm not cured. I am compulsive. I am the same. And now I'm passing on what I learned that worked for me. Now I'm the person that I'm sharing how life is hard, how I've had, you know, things, bad things happen. I get challenged. I'm terrified. But here's the steps that I'm taking. Here's the step I'm in today, and here are the tools that I'm taking to keep me focused on my step progress. And the longer I've been around, the more it's usually what God moves me to say, it's something that I needed to hear in my own ears that day. So meetings, and I will tell you, I had a relapse. After about a year and a half, I woke up one day and said, oh, when did I start binging on everything with high amounts of sugar? I didn't notice that I was doing that. I'm sure there was a progression here. And it probably was the thought of, oh, I gave up food X, and I've been clean for a year now without eating food X. I must be able to eat any of this other stuff. You know, the grandiose idea that, yeah, I can really do this the way I choose to and only do part of it. So part of my relapse was I tried to start a meeting on my own and in my neighborhood, and it didn't take. And then my sponsor left. I didn't have a sponsor. So pretty soon what happened is I dropped my spiritual practice and I stopped, you know, talking to my higher power, taking the third step and the 11th step. I stopped. Then I find myself in relapse, and I tell my husband, you know, I've been binging all this time and lying to myself, and I'm in relapse. And I think I need to go back. We were out of town, and I said, I think I really need to start making the effort to get back to meetings, because that's where I need to find another sponsor. And I said, okay, so you're starting over. A concept that he gets. It's one of the program things that he gets, starting over. I can relate to that. So I came back to meetings. So, you know, meetings are always a grounding point. And I always feel myself opening more when I'm on the way to my meeting before I even get there. Because I know this is where I'm going to get, where I can get all of this experience, strength, and hope, and share mine. So the other tools, and has somebody timed me? Is that right here? Okay, so I got...
You're at three.
Oh, wow! I can fill the space. Okay, so the plan of eating... It says, although individual plans of eating are as varied as our members, most OA members agree that some plan, no matter how flexible or structured, is necessary. I love this pamphlet. I wish I'd read that a long time ago. I'm sure it was in the literature. But it doesn't matter how flexible or structured our plan is, as long as we are honestly trying to act on a plan of eating that we think will work. If we think it might work out and we won't binge, and we can maybe be abstinent or get abstinent, then it's a good plan to try. But I need to be willing to, if it doesn't work and I do go binge, do I need to work on the plan? Do I need another plan? But it, like me, is always a work in progress. And, you know, coming on a trip where you don't have control of your food, interesting to work my food plan that way. But what I've learned is that when I travel, and I've traveled a lot, is that my food plan becomes talking to the wait staff where I'm eating. Telling them, like last night I said, oh, by the way, onions make me sick. Help me find food that doesn't have onions. This is a new thing. But it's also with the sugar, too. Help me find food that isn't sweetened. And I get willing to have that waiter be my, you know, be my source, my help for my food plan by being honest about what I need. Now, sponsorship, I think I already mentioned sponsorship a little bit. But, you know, I saw, and that goes along with the 12 step a lot, but I started sponsoring right after I got abstinent after step 9. I know people who are sponsoring on the second step because the person they're sponsoring is in the step behind them. And so sponsoring gave me a lot of gifts even when I was in and out of abstinence. So it was just a willingness of somebody to be a loving and accepting sounding board to talk all this stuff out with me. And so if you have, if you are sponsoring, I encourage you to do that. And then the telephone, you've all heard about the 100-pound telephone. And, you know, we don't really... One thing I did before I came on this trip is I called my phone company and I said, can I have international cell service? And I spent the $30 to have a month of international service so that if I needed to make a call to be well, I could do that. I could give myself that. But we have a ship calling system, so, you know, we could actually tech each other in the, on this cruise to be a phone buddy. You know, so it'll work here just as well as it works on land. Writing, well, writing is, goes a lot with the inventory, and it's definitely, one of the things I always pack is I always pack something, some kind of paper. But even if I was at a hotel, I would use their stationery. So as long as I've got this and a pen, I can do the writing. The action plan, I usually have the same action plan, which is what am I going to do today? And it includes a lot of other things that are not about recovery, but... it can also be planning to use the other tools. And I find that when I'm challenged in a situation like this, making a clear, conscious action plan for the day and a plan for situations I think I'm going to be in, that helps tremendously. It takes a lot of the fear and it helps me surrender actively. So sometimes the action plan is where it starts for me on trips. The literature, I have a Kindle and I carry my books on my Kindle. I've got an iPad. I have it on my phone. I don't have to have a lot of stuff in the suitcase. I've also learned that I need to be willing to put that other pair of shoes down and put my books in my case. To ask myself, how willing am I to get my literature that I need on the trip with me? But the Kindle stuff is great. And a lot of people talked about service in the... And I think I've mentioned that enough. The last... one is anonymity. Anonymity, that gets kind of interesting in this situation too, right? Because I was wearing my shirt and people were coming up to ask them, oh, which group are you here with? Well, I'm not going to say that because now I'm going to out everybody else who's wearing the shirt. So anonymity is just being mindful. It's just continuing to be consciously mindful of taking care of everybody in my fellowship so that we're all safe in this situation, and we don't get any unwanted, unpleasant attention for ourselves and each other. So that, I'm over time, so I want to be quiet, so now you can share on the tools. And these tools, and my higher power, and my sponsor have given me some beautiful trips, and this is going to be one of them. Thanks. Mm-hmm.